Our next speaker, as you heard, is Elizabeth Fine, a professional social worker. She's director of the Caregivers Program at Mount Sinai School of Medicine, a member of various task forces on Alzheimer's disease care, and has published articles and made presentations on helping patients and caregivers cope with Alzheimer's disease. She will discuss the topic of caring for someone with a memory problem, what caregivers ought to know, and what they ought to do. It's fine.
I'm a little bit shorter than Dr. Duguay, so I'd like to understand a bit. Okay. Good morning. Hi. What I want to do today is talk to you about the stages that someone goes through who is experiencing memory problems like Alzheimer's disease, and how you as their caregiver can be of help to them as well as be helpful to yourself. Because as you continue to care for yourself, you are in turn helping that person with a memory problem. But saying those things and being able to do them are two different things. So what my job today is to try and give you some tools to start the process to be able to begin to care for this person through the course of the illness. As we've heard already, Alzheimer's disease and related dementias are illnesses that change over time, that in the earliest stage of the illness for the individual with Alzheimer's disease, it's actually hard to realize that someone in the very early stages might have a memory problem. So often it goes undetected in families and through physicians. It's usually when the activities of that person start to impact on their daily life that you start to see family members and friends and people in the community start to know that something isn't quite right. And this is usually the time when they go for an evaluation. This early stage when someone is experiencing these subtle differences, their inability maybe to handle their finances like they used to, if someone always has been taking care of the household and they're now starting to have difficulty maybe making their favorite Sabbath meal or remembering one of the prayers during the Sabbath services. These are subtle things that you as your family member would know that there's a change happening in that person. And for you as the caregiver to know that there is a way to try and get help, and we've already heard from Dr. Duguay what's involved in an evaluation, how to determine if someone has a memory problem. But in this very early stage, for family members, when the patient and the family gets a diagnosis of something like Alzheimer's disease, I think a variety of issues go through and emotions go through both the patient themselves if they're in this mild stage as well as those who are caring for them. Because I've done a lot of work with patients who have been in the very early stage of the illness. And often people are quite able to understand that they are experiencing problems and are upset and distressed about them, understandably. And having an avenue in which to talk about it or let other people know that they're experiencing these changes is important for the person themselves and also very scary. But so too it is for their caregivers. And I think there's a variety of feelings and emotions that one experiences when they get that diagnosis. For the person themselves, as I've already mentioned, but for caregivers, if you think about this, there's a whole list of things that I could go on and talk about, but what I think initially happens is that there's a variety of experiences. First of all, there's probably a shock, or sometimes there's an acknowledgement that yes, I knew there was something wrong, but I wasn't quite sure, and going to see the doctor helps to confirm it. But getting the diagnosis is only the first step. Because Alzheimer's disease and related disorders are slow and progressive, this can be a plus in some respects because it gives you the time to try and start to make decisions. Decisions that are difficult to make when one is well, but as important and even more important to do when someone is given a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. So for you as the caregiver, caring for someone in the earliest stage of the illness, there's a couple of things one should start to do. First of all, of course, go for an evaluation. get the appropriate medicine that there is available to try and see if it can be of some help to try and deal with some of the symptoms and slow down the course of the illness with some of the medicines that Dr. Duguay mentioned. Next, it's important to be able to acknowledge and talk with friends and family about what's happened. Quite often when we deal with families, it's maybe the spouse coming in with her husband or vice versa, and often they like to keep this to themselves. They don't want to burden the children with it. That's one of the most common things I hear. And I can understand that, but I also know that one way, and one of the most important ways that families are able to cope with this illness is, as we heard from the caregivers today already, that having a support system available to help them do that is one of the most important things that I'm going to try and connect you to. What's also important is for caregivers to know that doing some legal and financial planning is an important thing to consider as well, because over time, as the person deteriorates, as we heard already, caring for that person in the middle stage when they need more and more assistance with daily activities like bathing and washing and dressing, it's often extremely overwhelming for one person to do. And often sometimes do people, as we heard, as the family mentioned, bring people in to try and help them to do that. And this can be quite costly. So making sure that legal and financial decisions can be made in this earlier stage is one of the important things to try and do. And that should be done with legal specialists who deal with elder care. They're called elder care attorneys. And if you contact the Alzheimer's Association, and there's information on their numbers in the back there, on their brochures, they have legal and financial seminars in the boroughs out here at periodic times through the year, as well as five times a week in the city. So if you call their number and find out when a meeting is going on, you can hear from an expert in elder care and then get referrals to other lawyers that can help access that kind of elder care, legal planning that you need to do. What's also important to do is to consider, as the illness progresses, patients' and families' thoughts about how and what kind of treatment people want to have through the course of their life. Things like living wills and healthcare proxies, I'm going to just mention briefly, as something that one should consider and hopefully have the opportunity to discuss with the patient and the family about their healthcare decisions through their lifetime. Because unfortunately, we know that the course of Alzheimer's disease is one where it is a slow decline over many, many years. And the person becomes less and less able to make decisions for themselves regarding finances, regarding what they're even wearing or what they're going to cook that day, but also as the illness goes on in terms of healthcare decisions and how their health should be taken care of. So this is all sort of things that should be done at a time when you just hear a diagnosis, which can be quite overwhelming. Excuse me. Not to say it has to be done in the first week, but I'm saying that over time, in the first year or so, these are things that families should consider doing. As the illness progresses, though, and families start to see that they've got... Thank you very much, sorry. As the illness slowly changes and the person becomes a little bit less able to be as independent as they had before. Because in this early stage, which can last anywhere from, well, I don't even know what to say, but 2 to 5 years, depending on how early someone is diagnosed, the person is still quite independent. They might be able to be in the family, be participating in everything they used to, just with a little supervision and assistance. And for caregivers, one can usually be able to somewhat carry on their daily life as they used to, but just keeping an eye out for their mother to see how she's doing, to make sure that she's safe at home and that she's eating and taking care of herself adequately. But caregivers also start to realize that this is a slow process and that their feelings start to change. At the beginning, it might be a little bit more of shock and concern about what to do in the immediate future regarding treatment. As the illness gets into the middle stages, this is when we start to see family members start to experience more and more mixture of feeling of making sure they know what they're doing for that person, a sense of accomplishment, and that they're taking care of supervising that person well, but also the concern that they're noticing changes in that person. And it's painful to see someone that you care about going through these changes, not being able to do things that they've always been able to do. Someone who was head of the household who is now unable to take care of the finances, and their wife might have to take over that responsibility. So the added responsibility on the caregiver leads to many dimensions. One is taking care of the financial responsibilities of the household. Also, it's taking care of the household activities and the stress and frustration that can come sometimes when we've heard, as the family mentioned this morning, about someone who is constantly repeating themselves. It's fine to be able to talk to someone and answer their question once or twice, but when that short-term memory becomes so impaired in the person that the caregiver needs to spend 10, 20 times during the day, or even more, answering the same question again and again, we're human and you can tend to get frustrated or angry at yourself or angry at the illness. And having a way and an outlet to be able to talk about those feelings is important. And sometimes it's difficult to do that. Sometimes people have a network of friends or friends who've gone through similar things to talk to, which is wonderful, and I encourage that. But also, some people tend to go the other way and become more isolated. And often we see caregivers who isolate themselves from the family, from their extended family, from the community. And usually it's the community and family trying to reach out to them or healthcare professionals. It's hard to do that. So if you know people in your community that you're starting to notice a change, whether you see someone come to shul every day or week, and now you're noticing they're coming less often, I would say reach out to those people, because often they're feeling so overwhelmed themselves that they're not able to do that. They might, as we talked about, the patient can get depressed. Caregivers can also feel depressed and overwhelmed, and unless they get treatment, medical treatment and also social supports, they too can become a victim of this illness as well. Because they do say that there are really two, or probably I would say three or four, for every person who has Alzheimer's disease, this illness touches at least three or four other people in their lives, whether it's friends or family or acquaintances. So the number of people that are impacted with this illness and are dealing with it is monumental. But reaching out to these families is something that I feel the community is, and your community is very well set up to do, and I think that helps to support them in their endeavors. Also knowing that there are support groups from the Alzheimer's Association, and Judy's going to talk a little bit about other services like that in the next little while. But also the fact that as the illness progresses, it usually is more and more overwhelming for caregivers. This is when the time when they might need to have someone come in and try to pay for that person to come in and help supervise that family member's care. There's mixed feelings, and we heard about it, a feeling that it's my responsibility, it's my parent, and I should be doing everything for them. It's my spouse, it's my aunt, it's my uncle, and I'm the one who should be there to do it. Well, yes, you can be there to do it, but being there to be the caregiver is also making sure that you can take care of yourself. Because if you, the caregiver's health becomes impaired, and most often it can, there's been studies to show, and we've done studies at Mount Sinai that says that caregivers who neglect themselves by not going to the physician for their own checkups, they'll take the person with the illness to their doctor's appointment, but they won't take themselves, start to impact on the quality of their own health care. And if you as a caregiver are not taking care of yourself, how are you going to be able to best take care of that person? Taking care of someone with Alzheimer's disease, as I say, is usually something that one person can't do. I have to say, over 12 years I've worked with Alzheimer's families and the assistance that I needed. Often caregivers don't know how to ask for help too, because sometimes they feel the family should know what they need, that we can read their minds. And I don't know, I haven't been able to read anybody's mind yet. If someone in your family can do that, that's great. But I think the idea is to try and help them to help you. For family members, what I would encourage you to do is, if you have family and friends around, is to let them know how they can help you. For example, maybe they could come over once a week and have tea or coffee with that person. That would give you a little bit of a break. It would also help to create a routine for you and that person. Because someone with Alzheimer's disease, from the beginning stages onward, is helped a lot by having a routine. It's helpful for the patient themselves, it helps to give them structure, but it's also very helpful for the caregivers. Helping to try and create a routine is also easy to say and harder to do, depending on how the person with this illness progresses over time. But starting to set up a routine which incorporates helping that person to maintain some sense of independence, helping them to be able to do activities that they always were able to do, but maybe to a lesser extent. For example, someone might not be able to make a full course meal for dinner, but they might be able to help in part of the process. This helps to give the person a sense of accomplishment. It also helps you because they're doing part of the cooking job. So incorporating them and involving them in the process of their daily activities is important. What might happen, though, is they might be only able to do one or two of the activities, the steps of the activity. Instead of making a full course meal, they might be able to chop up some of the vegetables and help make sure they're set up to be cooked. But they're part of the process. Don't isolate them from their daily lives and what they used to do. It's important to try and maintain that involvement with people and with their family as much as possible. So helping to create a routine is very important for the caregiver and the patient. The routine can involve possibly someone coming in the middle stage of the illness or later as the illness progresses, reaching out to community resources that are available. If someone can participate in the community services, I would encourage them to continue to do that as long as possible. Also reaching out to other day programs that are specially suited for people with dementia, which Judy's going to talk about, and where they are, those that are best suited to this community, is also an extremely valuable asset to caregivers and also for the person. Because to keep that person mentally active is also important. If someone sits home and is idle or is watching TV in a passive mode, it's not as healthy for them. To be involved in doing things is a much better way to be. What's also important to do is to see that you have your resource list, that you take care of yourself by reaching out to others and building that support system. That's one of the most important things that I leave you with, is to find out, and when Judy starts to mention the specific places, find out the associations and the organizations that are nearest you. To maybe join a support group to be able to share your thoughts and feelings and concerns with other people. If a support group isn't for you, having a friend or a confidant or even going to see a therapist to be able to help you, or go to the rabbi to be able to talk and communicate with someone about what you're going through, because it's too much for one person to do. And building that support system around you is the way to help you maintain that person at home longer and as well as possible. There's also been studies to show that were done at NYU that those caregivers that were involved in support groups were able to keep family members at home in the community much longer than those who didn't reach out to people for support. So that's an important thing to remember. Also, to make sure that you as a caregiver take as much care of yourself as you do with that person. Make sure you go to the doctor when they're going to the doctor. Make sure you go to the dentist when they're going to the dentist, and the eye doctor. Don't neglect yourself for the sake of them, because you're the one that they depend on for everything. And if your health is compromised, if your mood is compromised, you're not going to be able to take as much care of them as you want to, or as the best care of them as you want to. The other thing is important to do is to try to factor in your schedule of day-to-day activities time for respite, time that you can get away, whether it's just to go out and meet a friend, or whether it's taking a couple of days and having someone in the family come in and help you supervise that person. Try to incorporate that into your schedule as well, and to help other people be able to do that is the most valuable gift that you can give them in the mitzvah, I would say. Also, make sure to do exercise. You as caregivers are vulnerable. Make sure if you're going out If the person needs to go out and go for a walk, you go with them. It's important to keep that physical exercise involved as well, because that maintains your overall well-being, physical well-being. So the resources that are available in the community, I'm going to let Judy talk about. And the information that we have at the back, it's a blue newsletter, talks about the services that we have at Mount Sinai. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.